Thank you so much for joining Living Black Radio. Ray Martin, we want to talk about the First Contact Series 2. In the first series, you had six people who were ordinary people. They were participating in the program. Can you talk about why this time you chose six celebrities for the series?
I guess the concept is such a great concept that, you know, 6 out of 10 Australians have not met an Indigenous person. And so in the first case, it was just ordinary good people, but ordinary people. These were celebrities, and it's no different. You can be a celebrity, you can be a world-famous singer like Natalie Imbruglia, or you can be a political activist like David Oldfield and One Nation, and, you know, not having met an Australian Aboriginal person, Indigenous person. And so, you know, it's the same whether you're famous or whether you're not. And what you find is these people all wanted to spend the time, all these six people, you know, who are very busy and successful, they wanted to give a month of their lives and wander around. They didn't know where they were going. We just took them on these journeys to confront their prejudices. And they weren't racist. They were just ignorant about Aboriginal people. And so, you know, when you shine a light into dark corners, excuse the pun, but, you know, they come up with knowledge. And when you understand why people are the way they are, you're better able to fix it. And I guess that's what we did.
Yeah, so you chose different communities. You started off at Uluru and then you obviously branched out. Can you talk about why you chose the communities and the permission process of going into country and working with communities for this series?
Yeah, you can't go anywhere, of course, even in capital cities, without permission if you're going to talk to people. And you... And it's a circus of, you know, the SBS crew is about 30 people. And so you've got our six people plus me, plus producers and cameramen and women and sound recordists and you know, others, you know, even a security guy and some others who just have to manage the team as they go around. So if you arrive in a community that's really troubled and really in disarray, well, you just add to the troubles by suddenly coming to town with cameras. And so you have to get permission and the approval of people. And so I've been to much more devastated, much more disadvantaged communities than we went to. But if you go there, then you don't help them, you hurt them, and with cameras. And so we had to be careful, and we had to be welcome. We went to mostly the Northern Territory and Western Australia and North Queensland, mostly to that sort of outback along the coast and in interior. And we met people, and we looked at the problems of suicide, and we looked at the problem of overcrowded housing, and we looked at the problem of health, and we looked at the problem of drinking and drugs, just for the life of people who are at the extreme edge of Indigenous Australia. It's not black people who live in the cities or live in regional Australia, really. It's people who live on the edge, the fringe of our great land, and who probably have the extreme end of disadvantage of all Australian people. And so in that sense, they had a chance to ask them questions and see for themselves. And, you know, there are no answers because the problem is too complex. But nevertheless, they could start to understand why things happen as they do.
So you also, as part of the series, the participants met with the First Nations elders who were part of the Stolen Generations. And so was that when they could make the connection and see where some of the transference of generational trauma came from, when they actually understood the old policies that people were forced to live under?
Yeah. No, the three women, they all said it was the most moving part of a month-long journey. They met women who were in their 60s and who told them exactly what had happened to them. In fact, their families weren't dysfunctional. I think in all the cases, the fathers were working and the families were together, and suddenly they found that they were split or separated, and they were taken off to a girl's home, and our three women stayed in the home overnight with them, and if you like, sort of felt the ghosts that were in that town, in that home, and they committed themselves to be ambassadors for the women and for the Stolen Generation. Someone like David Oldfield refused to accept when he went to the boys' home at Kinchula, just outside of Kempsey, New South Wales. He refused to accept that these men were stolen. He said that they were, you know, they were in most cases better off, and there's no such thing as a Stolen Generation. Well, you know, that's just a head-in-the-sand attitude when you have two men telling you the experience, and they tell you about, you know, how they were at the age of 10 or 11, they were taken off to the tree where they were chained up as punishment because they hadn't milked the cows on time, or because they hadn't done something like that. And to hear these men stand alongside the tree and almost break down in tears when they remember how painful it was, you'd have to be made of stone not to respond to it. Now, David Oldfield, by nature, wanted to ask questions about, you know, what had led the children there, and did they really know why they were taken away and all these sorts of stupid questions that aren't relevant to the experience. So whereas the other two men who were there just shook their heads in sorrow and in shame about what had happened to these old men, and that was the truth of the experience. But that's, you know, you don't take people on a journey like this one where you expect it's guaranteed they're going to change their minds or their opinions. You, of course, hope they will. And if, in fact, in 99 cases out of 100, they do. When people see the reality of poverty and the reality of disadvantage and the reality of life in some of these communities, especially for children nowadays, then, of course, you want to fix it up. You want to do something about it, which is, there's no guarantee. As David Oldfield said, you know, because I see something, that doesn't mean I'm going to change my mind. Well, for most people, it does. If you see something that runs counter to what you thought was the truth. But that's all right. You know, we can live with people like David ask questions, and he was an important part of the journey. As frustrating as he was when he kept talking rather than listening to people, he kept talking at them and arguing with them. You feel like you want to, you know, put a bag over his head. But nevertheless, he represents a percentage of people. You hear it and see it all your life. And Aboriginal people do, and they, you know, turn the other cheek and try and, you know, explain the truth, but sometimes it doesn't work.
You're listening to SBS Radio Living Black. I'm Kirsten Lindsay, and I'm in conversation with journalist Ray Martin, host of the First Contact Series 2. Yeah, it's interesting, because did you feel that the participants, in a way, their attitudes, a naivety around Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people sort of was a bit of a cross-section of attitudes and expectations across Australia?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think that the beauty of this is that these people represent, the six people that went represent Australians, white Australians, which is, you know, 98% of the population. And so people watching the program, and they should and will, because it's a compelling television program, they're going on the journey. It's them on the journey, not superstars, even though people like Natalie are there. And Tom Ballard, a 26-year-old, you know, young gay comic from Melbourne. And he's highly intelligent and highly sensitive, and you go with him. And so people go on the journey, and you see their changes and see the reaction, and everybody cries at various stages. It's impossible not to. So I think it's powerful television. I think it's a journey that Australia has to take. But that doesn't mean that there isn't something for black Australians to do as well. That this is this, you know, if we're going to start to fix this problem, and a problem is all about, you know, unemployment and about housing and about jobs and about schools and about health and all these things that you know even better than I, and yet we have to do it together. And so it's no good, you know, someone talking any more about poor bugger me. What came out of this for me was once again a reminder that, you know, you've got to get the kids to school and you've got to wash their hands and wash their faces. Otherwise, they're going to get trachoma and bad eyes and bad noses and bad throats and et cetera. So, you know, basic health is important. You've got to get a job if you possibly can, even if it means leaving what you regard as home, because that's what your grandfathers did when they went, you know, when they went with cattle and drove cattle through these areas as stockmen. They were away for months at a time, and they had to do that to get money to pay for their children and pay for their families. And so, you know, you've got to clean up the garbage. There's no excuse for having garbage around the house or around the yards. All those sort of things. And you can't have drunkenness around kids, and you can't have parties all night so kids can't get some sleep and get some homework done if they've got to do it. All those things that are really basic. It's not racist to say this. It doesn't mean that every Aboriginal house is anything like that, but there are too many that are like that. The drinking problem is worse in white Australia than it is in black Australia, but it's still a major problem in Aboriginal Australia. So you go to a place like Fitzroy Crossing and you find where they've brought in some fairly strict drinking laws, that the violence and the domestic violence and the other violence and the appearance at the hospital and the emergency and the demands on police is far less than it was before they brought the laws in. So you've got to look at the laws to see if they can help, if they can certainly help. But the primary, I think, is, you know, those children have to go to school and have to get an education.
Okay, I know you've got to go, but I wanted to just say, do you think that the focus is so much around policy and what's happening in Canberra, it's until people actually see these issues on the ground that it doesn't really become a reality?
Yeah, I do. I do accept that. I also think that it's not that politicians don't want to change it. There's no question, given the amount of money that we put into the Aboriginal sector, that politicians want to change it. If it was easy, then we would have changed it 50 years ago. There's no question about it. It's a really complex problem. And I think talking to your audience and talking to you, and again with my Blackfella connections and all these years that I've spent in reconciliation, it also requires some work from Aboriginal people. It's no longer good enough to simply say, look, you know, my mother was stolen or my family was stolen and we've been ostracised, we've been beaten up and we've been oppressed and so on. Yes, that's true. That is absolutely true and it's shameful, but we have to move on and we have to actually give kids a chance. So you've got to take some responsibility for your children and for your families. You've got to get them to school. You've got to stop the excessive alcoholism. You've got to, et cetera, all the things we talked about. Now, that is not racist and it's not saying all families are like that because, of course, they're not. But nevertheless, it's a major problem. They are the sickest, poorest, you know, most disenfranchised, disadvantaged people in Australia. Beyond doubt, that's Aboriginal Australia. And we have to fix it. We've got to stop at some stage. You know, I will die before things are fixed. And I've spent 40 years involved in this. And my great fear is that not because politicians don't want to do it, it's because, you know, people aren't committed enough to do something about it and aren't prepared to spend money on it and commit, you know, resources to it. So the end result is kids are dying with suicide in the Territory and in the Kimberley because no one there to counsel them, no one there to get them out of it because we just don't put the money into it and put the efforts there. So it's a combined thing. But Blackfellas have to be responsible. They have to do something as well. We've got to hold hands and walk in this thing together.
And just finally, in the first series, the scenes where they actually connect to country and they go through ceremony, do you feel that's a really important way for people to understand their true connection to themselves and to country and the community by going through those ceremonies?
Oh, no question. No question. I mean, it's such a rich part of who we are as a nation, not just Blackfellas, but Whitefellas as well. And to, you know, embrace the Aboriginal past and the first Australians to embrace what they have and what they offer is absolutely vitally important. And therefore, it doesn't mean, honestly, I think there are things like the promised brides and some of the traditional punishments and some of the attitudes, I think, just have to change in 2016. And that doesn't mean that we try and get Blackfellas to assimilate because we don't want that either. But we also, there are things that are, you know, promised brides, for example, are unforgivable in Australia today. A young girl who's chosen when she's pre-puberty and given to a man, as happens in some of the communities, is unacceptable. Now, that doesn't happen widely in Australia, but it shouldn't happen at all. So there's some things that traditional law that just isn't appropriate anymore, if it was ever appropriate. It's not appropriate anymore. So things we've got to change and be honest, and we've got to say, you know, the Blackfellas have got to be responsible, as well as Whitefellas have got to do something. But together we can start to change it. And everything we've done up to now is, you know, left it as bad as it was. The blindness, the sickness, the unemployment, the housing, et cetera, hasn't changed. And we have to change.
Well, Ray Martin, thank you so much for joining SBS Radio Living Black. It's lovely to talk to you.
It's great to talk to you too. And it's a pleasure. And thanks for the questions.